captive carcass. Then why keep asking? Gwyn said. Cassian scowled. Curiosity. But his jaw tightened. It wasn't that. There was something else. Why would he want her to name a sword? Back to work, he said, clapping his hands. For all that sass, you're doing double time on the Valkyrie lunge hold. Emery and Gwyn groaned, but Nesta surveyed Cassian for another moment before following their lead. She was still mulling it over when they finished 2 hours later, drenched in sweat, legs wobbling. Emery and Gwyn picked up their earlier conversation and aimed for the water station. Nesta watched the two of them go, then turned to Cassian. Why were you pestering me about naming a sword? His eyes remained on Gwyn and Emery. I just wanted to know what you'd name one. That's not an answer. Why do you want to know? He crossed his arms, then uncrossed them. Do you remember when we went to the blacksmith? Yes. He's giving me a blade for winter solstice? He's given you three. The ones you touched. She arched an eyebrow. He tapped his foot on the ground. When you hammered those blades, you imbued them, the two swords and the dagger, with your power, the cauldron's power. They're now magic blades, and I'm not talking nice, pretty magic. I'm talking big, ancient magic that hasn't been seen in a long, long time. There are no magic weapons left, none. They were either lost or destroyed or dumped in the sea, but you just made three of them. You created a new dread trove. You could create even more objects if you wished. Her brows rose higher with each absurd word. I made three magic weapons? We don't know yet what manner of magic they have, but yes. She angled her head. Emery and Gwyn halted their chatting at the water station, as if they could see or sense the shift in her. And it wasn't the fact that she'd made these weapons that hit her like a blow. Who is we? What? You said we don't know what manner of magic they have. Who is we? Rhys and Feyre and the others. And how long have all of you known about this? He winced as he realized his error. Nesta, how long? Her voice became sharp as glass. The priestesses were watching and she didn't care. He did, apparently. This isn't the place to talk about it. You're the one trying to coax a name out of me in the middle of training. She gestured to the ring. Her blood pounded in her ears and Cassian's face grew pained. This isn't coming out the way it should. We argued about whether to tell you, but we took a vote, and it went in your favor, because we trust you. I just hadn't gotten a chance to bring it up yet. There was a possibility you wouldn't even tell me? You all sat around and judged me, and then you voted? Something deep in her chest cracked to know that every horrible thing about her had been analyzed. Fuck. Cassian reached for her, but she stepped back. Everyone was staring now. Nesta, this isn't... Who voted against me? Rhys and Amron. It landed like a physical blow. Rhys came as no surprise. But Amron, who had always understood her more than the others? Amron, who'd been unafraid of her? Amron, with whom she'd quarreled so badly? Some small part of her had hoped Amron wouldn't hate her forever. Her head went quiet. Her body went quiet. Cassian's eyes widened. Nesta. I'm fine, she said coolly. I don't care. She let him see her fortify those steel walls within her mind, used every bit of mind-stilling she'd practiced with Gwyn to become calm, focused, steady. breathing in through her nose, out through her mouth. She made a show of rolling her shoulders, of approaching Emery and Gwyn, whose faces bunched with concern, in a way Nesta knew she didn't deserve, in a way she knew would one day vanish when they too realized what a wretch she was. When Amryn told them what a pathetic waste of life she was, or when they heard it from someone else, and they ceased being her friends. She wondered if they'd even say it to her face, or if they'd just disappear. Nesta, Cassian said again, but she left the ring without looking back at him. Emery was on her heels instantly, trailing her down the stairs. What's wrong? Nothing, Nesta said, her own voice foreign to her ears. Court business. Are you all right? Gwyn asked, a step behind Emery. No. She couldn't stop the roaring in her head, the cracking in her chest. Yes, she lied, and didn't look back as she hit the landing and vanished down the hall. Nesta made it to her bedroom where she ran the bath. She knew Cassian would come by. So she stood by the tub, the water gushing from the spout, while he knocked on her door. She waited until she sensed him leave, giving up on her as everyone else had, and then shut off the flow. She asked the house, "Is he gone?" The door opened in answer. "Thank you." She strode into the empty hallway. Perhaps the house hid her from sight, for she saw and scented no glimpse of Cassian as she hurried down the short flight of stairs near her room, down the hall, right through the archway, into that long stairwell. Then, and only then, did she let her fury out. Then, and only then, did she drop that coldness and give herself over to the raging of her heart. Amryn had deemed her so untrustworthy, so awful, that knowing she had this world-altering gift would be dangerous. Amryn had spoken to the others about it, and they had voted on it. Down and down and down, step to step to step, around and around and around. She didn't count the stairs, didn't feel her legs moving. There was only the roaring of her blood and the roaring in her head and the crack down the center of her chest. No amount of mind-stilling could calm it, smother it. The ground grew nearer. She couldn't think around her fury, that pain. Couldn't think, only move. The stairwell turned warmer, farther away from the cold wind above. Amryn had entirely given up on her. The debate about sending her up here had been different. Nesta knew that debate had been out of a desire to help her. She could acknowledge that now. This debate had been out of hatred and fear of her. The tiled rooftops became clear. Her legs were shaking. She didn't feel them, didn't feel anything but that molten rage as the stairs suddenly stopped, and she found herself before a door. It opened before her fingers could touch the handle. Sunlight flooded the stairwell, revealing cobblestones beyond. Rage rippling like a storm around her, Nesta stepped back into Velaris at last. Chapter 46. She didn't note the city around her, the people who either beheld her face and kept well away or simply went about their business. Didn't note the vibrant oranges and reds and yellows of the autumn trees, or the sparkling blue of the Sidra as she crossed one of the countless bridges spanning its winding body, aiming for its western bank. Nesta yielded to her fury. Later, she would have no memory of racing up the steps to the loft, no memory of the walk over before she slammed a hand into the wooden door. It shattered beneath her palm, wards fracturing like glass. Amryn and Varian were in bed, the petite female naked as she rode the Prince of Adriata. Both of them halted, Amryn twisting toward the door, Varian bolting upright, a shield of water coming around them as Nesta stepped into the room and growled, "You! You thought I shouldn't even be told what my power can do!" Amryn moved with the swiftness of the High Fae, leaping off Varian, who grabbed a sheet to cover himself as she slung a silk robe around her body. That shimmering wall of water made it seem as if they were beneath the ocean's surface. Amryn shot Varian a look. "Drop it." He obeyed, sliding from the bed and shoving his long, muscled legs into his pants. Nesta snarled at him. "Get out." But the Summer Court Prince watched Amryn, his face tight with concern. He'd stay, go down defending her. Nesta snorted, bitterness coating her tongue. Once, Amryn had been that person for her. The person she knew would defend her in a fight, would speak for her. Amryn nodded to him, and Varian threw Nesta a warning glare before hurrying from the room, presumably to tell the others. But Nesta didn't care. Not as Amryn said, "I suppose that loud-mouthed bastard told you more than was necessary." "You voted against me," she said, her cold voice belying the crack in her chest. "You have done nothing to prove you are able to handle such a terrible power," Amryn said with equal iciness. "On that barge, you told me as much when you walked away from any attempt at mastering it. I offered to teach you more, and you walked away."
"I walked away because you chose my sister."
Just as Elaine had done, Amryn had been her friend, her ally, and yet in the end, it hadn't mattered one bit. She'd picked Feyre.
"I didn't choose anyone, you spoiled girl," Amryn snapped.
"I told you that Feyre had requested you and I work together again, and you somehow twist that into me siding with her." Nesta said nothing. "I told them to leave you alone for months. I refused to speak about you with them. And then, the moment I realized my behavior was not helping you, that maybe your sister was right, I somehow betrayed you?" Nesta shook.
"You know how I feel about Feyre."
"Yes. Poor Nesta, with a younger sister who loves her so dearly she's willing to do anything to get her help." Nesta blocked out the memory of Tamlin in his beast form, how she had wanted to rip him limb from limb. She was no better than him, in the end. "Feyre doesn't love me." She didn't deserve Feyre's love, just as Tamlin hadn't. Amryn barked out a laugh.
"That you believe Feyre doesn't only proves you're unworthy of your power. Anyone that willfully blind cannot be trusted. You would be a walking nightmare with those weapons." "It's different now."
The words rang hollow. Was it any different? Was she any different than she'd been this summer, when she and Amryn had fought on the barge, and Amryn's utter disappointment in her failure to be anything had surfaced at last? Amryn smiled as if she knew that too. "You can train as hard as you want, fuck Cassian as often as you want, but it isn't going to fix what's broken if you don't start reflecting."
"Don't preach at me, you,"
she pointed at Amryn, and could have sworn the female stepped out of the line of fire, just as Tamlin had done. As if Amryn also remembered that the last time Nesta had pointed at an enemy, it had ended with his severed head in her hands. A joyless laugh broke from her.
"You think I'd mark you with a death promise?"
"You nearly did with Tamlin the other day." So Cassian had told them all about that, too. "But I'll say to you again what I said on that barge. I think you have powers that you still do not understand, respect, or control."
"How dare you assume you know what is best for me?"
When Amryn didn't answer, Nesta hissed, "You were my friend." Amryn's teeth flashed. "Was I? I don't think you know what that word means." Her chest ached, as if that invisible fist had punched her once again. Steps thudded beyond the shattered door, and she braced herself for Cassian to come roaring in. But it was Feyre. Paint splattered her casual clothes. A smear of white graced her freckled cheekbone. Varian must have run half naked through the streets to reach her studio. Feyre panted. Stop this! Whether Feyre noted or cared about the splinters and debris on the floor, she didn't let on as she moved closer. Feyre pleaded, Nesta, it should not have come out as it did. Did Cassian tell you that? He'd gone to Feyre rather than here. No, but I can guess as much. He didn't want to keep anything from you. My issue isn't with Cassian. Nesta leveled her stare at Amran. I trusted you to have my back. I stopped having your back the moment you decided to use that loyalty as a shield against everyone else. Nesta snarled, but Feyre stepped between them, hands raised. This conversation ends now. Nesta, you go back to the house. Amran, you... She hesitated, as if considering the wisdom of ordering Amran around. Feyre finished carefully. You stay here. Nesta let out a low laugh. You are her high lady. You don't need to cater to her. Not when she now has less power than any of you. Feyre's eyes blazed. Amran is my friend, and has been a member of this court for centuries. I offer her respect. Is it respect that she offers you? Nesta spat. Is it respect that your mate offers you? Feyre went still. Amran warned, Don't you say one more fucking word, Nesta Archeron. Feyre asked, What do you mean? And Nesta didn't care, couldn't think around the roaring. Have any of them told you, their respected high lady, that the babe in your womb will kill you? Amran barked, Shut your mouth! But her order was confirmation enough. Face paling, Feyre whispered again, What do you mean? The wings, Nesta seethed. The boy's Illyrian wings will get stuck in your fey body during the labor, and it will kill you both. Silence rippled through the room, the world. Feyre breathed. Maja just said the labor would be risky. But the bone carver, the son he showed me, didn't have wings. Her voice broke. Did he only show me what I wanted to see? I don't know, Nesta said. But I do know that your mate ordered everyone not to inform you of the truth. She turned to Amran. Did you all vote on that, too? Did you talk about her, judge her, and deem her unworthy of the truth? Was that your vote, Amran? To let Feyre die in ignorance? Before Amran could reply, Nesta turned back to her sister. Didn't you question why your precious, perfect Rhysand has been a moody bastard for weeks? Because he knows you will die. He knows. And yet he still didn't tell you. Feyre began shaking. If I die... Her gaze drifted to one of her tattooed arms. She lifted her head, eyes bright with tears as she asked Amran, You... all of you knew this? Amran threw a withering glare in Nesta's direction, but said, We did not wish to alarm you. Fear can be as deadly as any physical threat. Rhys? Knew? Tears spilled down Feyre's cheeks, smearing the paint splattered there. About the threat to our lives? She peered down at herself, at the tattooed hand cradling her abdomen. And Nesta knew then that she had not once in her life been loved by her mother as much as Feyre already loved the boy growing within her. It broke something in Nesta, broke that rage, that roaring, seeing those tears begin to fall, the fear crumpling Feyre's paint-smeared face. She had gone too far. She... Oh, gods, Amran said.
I think it is best, girl, if you speak to Rhysand about this. Nesta couldn't bear it, the pain and fear and love on Feyre's face as she caressed her stomach. Amarin growled at Nesta. I hope you're content now. Nesta didn't respond, didn't know what to say or do with herself. She simply turned on her heel and ran from the apartment. Cassian had gone to the river house. That had been his third mistake of the day. The first had been how clumsy he'd been in asking about a sword name, prompting Nesta's suspicion. He hadn't been able to lie to her, so he'd told her everything. The second mistake had been letting Nesta hide in her room and not barging in to speak to her, letting her take a bath, thinking it'd cool her off. He'd done the same, and when he'd emerged, he'd followed her scent to the floor with the exterior stairs, where the door stood open. He had no idea if she'd made it out or if she'd collapsed within. So he'd taken the steps too, all 10,000 of them, her scent fresh and furious. She'd made it to the bottom. The door had been left open. He'd launched skyward, knowing he'd have trouble tracking her scent in the bustling city, hoping to spot her from the air. He assumed Amarin was working at the river house, so that was where he'd gone. Only Amarin wasn't there, and neither was Nesta. He'd reached Rhys's study when word came, not from a messenger, but from Feyre, mind to mind with her mate. Rhys was at his desk, face tight, as he silently spoke to her. Cassian saw that look, knew who he spoke to, and went still. Neither was here, which meant they were probably at Amarin's apartment. And if Feyre was giving a report. Cassian whirled for the doors, knowing he could be there in a 2-minute flight, praying he'd be fast enough. Cassian! Rhys's voice was a thing of nightmares, of the darkness between the stars. Cassian froze at that voice he'd so rarely heard, and never once directed at himself. What happened? Rhys's face was wholly calm, but death, black, raging death, lay in his eyes. Not a star or shimmer of violet remained. Rhys said in that voice that was like hell embodied, Nesta saw fit to inform Feyre of the risk to her and the babe. Cassian's heart began thundering, even as it splintered. Rhys held his stare, and it was all Cassian could do to weather it, as his brother, his High Lord, said, Get Nesta out of the city right now. Rhys's power rumbled in the room like a rising storm. Before I fucking kill her. Chapter 47. Cassian found Nesta sprinting down a side street, as if she suspected that Rhysand was about to set out on a hunt that only her spilled blood could halt. But he knew she only ran from what she had done, ran from herself, ran toward one of the taverns she favored so much. Cassian didn't give Nesta the chance to see him as he soared down the alley, snatched her around the waist and beneath the knees, and swept them into the sky. She didn't fight him, didn't say a word, just lay in his arms, her face cold against his chest. Cassian soared over the House of Wind to find Azrael there, hovering in place, a heavy pack in his hand. Whether that had been from a separate warning from Rhys, or as his own shadows whispering, he didn't know. Cassian grabbed the pack, looping it around a wrist and grunting against its weight, as he kept hold of Nesta. Az didn't say anything as Cassian careened past into the autumn skies and did not dare look back at the city behind him. There were no sounds in her head. Her body. She knew Cassian held her, knew they flew for hours and hours, and she didn't care. She had done an unforgivable thing.
She deserved to be turned into bloody mist by Rhysand. Wished Cassian had not come to save her. They flew into the mountains until the sun sank behind them. By the time they landed, their surroundings were veiled in darkness. Cassian grimaced as he alit, as if every part of him hurt, and dumped the pack Azrael had given them at his feet. "We'll camp here tonight," he said quietly, coldly. She didn't want to speak, resolved not to say another word for the rest of her life. "I'll make a fire," he went on, and there was nothing kind in his face. She couldn't stand it, so she turned away, surveying the small area where he'd landed, a flat bit of dry earth just under the overhang of a black boulder. In silence, she walked to the deepest part of the overhang. In silence, she lay down upon the hard, dusty earth, using her arm for a pillow, and curled herself toward the rock wall. She closed her eyes and willed herself to ignore the snapping and cracking of the wood as the fire consumed it. Willed herself to melt into the earth, into the mountain, and disappear forever. Cassian. Feyre's voice filled Cassian's mind, pulling him from where he'd been watching the stars appear over the sprawling view. He'd flown Nesta to the Sleeping Mountains, the range that separated Illyria from Valaris. They were smaller peaks, not yet in winter's grasp, with plenty of rivers and game to hunt. Cassian,
I forgot you can mind speak.
Her laugh sounded. I can't decide whether I should be insulted or not. Perhaps I should be using the Damati gifts more often. She paused before saying, Are you all right?
I should be asking you that.
Rhysand overreacted. He completely and utterly overreacted. Cassian shook his head, though Feyre couldn't see it.
I'm sorry you had to learn of it.
I'm not. I'm furious with all of you. I understand why you didn't tell me, but I'm furious.
Well, we're furious with Nesta.
She had the courage to tell me the truth.
She told you the truth to hurt you.
Perhaps, but she was the only one who said anything. Cassian sighed through his nose. He thought it over.
I think she saw the parallels between your situations and, in her own way, decided to avenge both of you.
That's my feeling, too. Rhys disagrees.
I wish you'd found out a different way.
Well, I didn't. But we'll face it together, all of us.
How can you be so calm about this?
The alternative is fear and panic. I will not let my son feel those things. I will fight for him, for us. Until I no longer can.
Cassian's throat tightened. We'll fight for you, too.
I know. Feyre paused again. Rhys had no right to chase you from the city or to threaten Nesta. He has realized that and apologized. I want you to come back home, both of you. Where did you even head off to?
The wilderness.
Cassian looked over a shoulder to where Nesta had been asleep for the past few hours, curled into a tight ball against the wall of rock.
I think we'll stay out here for a few days. We're going to hike.
Nesta has never been on a hike in her life. I guarantee she will hate it.
Then tell Rhys this is her punishment, because Rhys, despite apologizing for his threats, would still be furious. Tell him that Nesta and I are going to hike, and she's going to hate it, but she comes home when I decide she's ready to come home.
Feyre was quiet for a long minute. He says he knows he's supposed to say that's unnecessary, but to tell you he's secretly delighted.
Good. I'm secretly glad to hear that.
Feyre laughed, and the sound was proof that she might have been hurt, startled by the news, But she was indeed adapting to it, would not let it make her cower and cry. He didn't know why he'd expected any less of her. Feyre said, "Please take care of her, Cassian. And yourself?" Cassian glanced to the sleeping female nearly hidden in the shadows of the rock. "I will." Chapter 48.
Get up.
Nesta tensed, cracking open an eye against the blinding brightness of dawn. Cassian stood above her, a plate of what looked like mushrooms and toast in one hand. Her entire body ached from the hardness of the ground and the chill of the night. She'd barely slept, had mostly lain there staring at the rock, willing herself to ignore the sounds of the fire, wishing to disappear into nothing. She eased into a sitting position, and he shoved the plate toward her.
"Eat. We've got a long day ahead."
She lifted her eyes, heavy and aching, to his face. There was nothing warm in it, no challenge or light, just solid, stone-cold warrior. Cassian said,
"We'll be hiking from dawn until dusk. Only 2 stops throughout the day, so eat."
It didn't matter whether she ate or slept or hiked, any of it. But Nesta forced herself to eat the food he'd prepared, not speaking as he doused the fire he'd built, focusing on anything but the crack of the logs. Cassian swiftly packed the few cooking supplies along with the rest of the food into the canvas bag. He picked it up, muscles shifting in his forearm with the weight, and walked to her before dumping it between her feet.
"I can't fit a pack that big on my back with the wings, so you'll be carrying it."
Had Asriel known that? From the icy, amused gleam in Cassian's eye, she thought yes. Nesta finished her food and had nothing to wash her plate with, so she shoved it into the pack. He said,
"You can wash the dishes when we get to the Girthus River at lunch. It's a 6-hour trek from here."
She didn't care. Let him drive her into the ground. Let him make her walk and act the servant. It wouldn't fix anything. Wouldn't fix her. Nesta stood, joints popping and body stiff. She didn't bother to reweave her braid.
"You can see to your needs around the corner."
He nodded toward the slight curve in the cliff face.
"No one is out here."
She did as he said. When she returned, he only nodded toward the pack.
"Pick it up."
Nesta grunted as she did. It had to be at least a third of her weight. Her back nearly bowed as she hefted it onto her shoulders, but she got it on, wriggling to adjust it. She fiddled with the straps and buckles until it was snug to her spine, the weight balanced across her chest and hips. Cassian apparently decided that she'd done a decent job.
"Let's go."
Nesta let him lead the way, and within 10 minutes her breathing became labored, her legs burning as Cassian stalked up the hillside, cutting along the mountain's face. He didn't speak to her, and she didn't speak to him. The day was as crisp as one could ever wish, the mountains around them vibrant green, the teal rivers so clear that even from high above, she could see the white stones lining their beds. Nesta gave herself over to it, the aching of her body, the panting of her breath, so sharp it was like glass. The roaring thoughts. The sun arced across the sky, wringing the sweat from her brow, her neck. Her hair became soaked with it. Still she walked, trailing Cassian farther up the peak. He reached a rocky outcropping, glanced over a shoulder once to make sure she was behind, then disappeared, presumably going downward. She reached the outcropping and beheld just how downward it was. He'd mentioned stopping at a river. Well, far below and ahead lay a broad band of a river, half shrouded in trees. It didn't look like it would take hours to reach. Yet, Cassian was walking across the mountain rather than going straight down.
no one would be able to directly descend without tumbling to their death. An entirely different set of muscles soon began to protest at the descent. It was worse than going upward, she realized. Now it felt as if the pack were determined to tip her forward and send her falling into the valley and river. Cassian didn't bother to carefully pick his steps amongst the grasses and small stones like she did. He, at least, had the reassurance of wings. This high up, the clouds drifted past like idle watchers, none merciful enough to offer shade against the blazing sun. Nesta's legs shook, but she kept moving, gripped the straps of the pack where they rested against her chest, and used her arms to ballast its weight. She followed Cassian down the mountain, step to step, hour by hour. She walked, one foot after another, and did not say anything at all. They halted for lunch at the river, if hard cheese and bread could be considered lunch. Nesta only cared that it filled her aching belly, only cared that the river before them was clear and clean, and she was parched. She collapsed on its grassy bank, kneeling to bury her face in it. She gasped into the shock of cold, then rose, lifting water to her mouth with a cupped palm, again and again, swallowing and swallowing. She pulled back from the river to lie on her side, her breathing still heavy. You have 30 minutes, Cassian said from where he sat in the tall, swaying grass, sipping from his canteen. Use it however you wish. She said nothing. Even nodding felt like too much. He opened the pack and chucked a canteen to her. Fill this. If you faint, you might fall off the mountain and break every bone in your body. She didn't look at him, didn't let him see the word in her eyes. Good. He went still, though. His next words were gentler, and she resented them, too. Rest up. Cassian knew that Nesta often hated herself, but he'd never known she hated herself enough to want to not exist anymore. He'd seen her expression when he mentioned the threat of falling, and he knew going back to Belarus wouldn't save her from that look. He couldn't save her from that look either. Only Nesta could save herself from that feeling. He let her rest for the 30 minutes he'd promised, and perhaps he was a little pissed at her still, because he merely said, "Let's go," before starting off again. She followed in that heavy, brimming silence, as quiet as a trailing pack horse. He knew these mountains well enough from flying over them for centuries. Shepherds lived here, usually ordinary fairies who preferred the solitude of the towering green and brownish-black stones to more populated areas. The peaks weren't as brutal and sharp as those in Illyria, but there was a presence to them that he couldn't quite explain. Moore had once told him that long ago, these lands had been used for healing, that people injured in body and spirit had ventured to these hills, the lake they were now 2.5 days from reaching, to recover. Perhaps that was why he'd come. Some instinct had remembered the healing, felt this land's slumbering heart, and decided to bring Nesta here. Mile after mile, her silence like a looming wraith behind him. Cassian wondered if it would be enough. Chapter 49. They were halfway up a mountain that looked like a mere hill from a distance, when Cassian said from ahead, "We camp here for the night." He'd stopped at an outlook over the mountainside, the nearest peak so close she could have hit it with a stone, separated only by another river snaking far below. The ground was pale and dusty, and most of all it was flat. Nesta said nothing as she staggered up to level ground, legs giving out at last, and sprawled onto the dirt. It bit into her cheek, but she didn't care, not as she breathed and breathed, her body trembling. She wouldn't move until dawn. not even to use the bathroom. She'd rather wet herself than have to move another muscle. Cassian said from across the small site, "Take off the pack before you pass out so I can at least cook myself dinner." His words were cold, distant. He'd barely spoken to her all day. She deserved it. Deserved worse. The thought had her unclipping the straps from where they lay, across her hips and chest. The pack thudded to the earth, and she twisted to nudge it toward him with a foot. Her leg trembled with the movement, but she made herself back up until she was leaning against a small boulder. He grabbed the pack with only a grunt, as if she hadn't been sweating and shaking under its weight all day. He then strode off into the nearby brush, the knee-high grasses and rushes rustling. The wind murmured, wending between the peaks. Shadows slowly crept over the craggy sides of the mountains, the lingering sun casting their upper limits in gold, the chill deepening with each inch yielded to the rising dark. The river roared down the mountainside, a constant rushing that she'd heard throughout the day as they walked, its many rapids just barely visible from the outlook. Even here, with the light fading, the river's colors shifted from slate to jade to pine as it wandered between the peaks along the valley floor. It was all so still, yet watchful somehow, as if she were surrounded by something ancient and half awake, as if each peak had its own moods and preferences, like whether the clouds clung to or avoided them, or trees lined their sides or left them bare. Their shapes were so odd and long that they looked as if behemoths had once lain down beside the rivers, pulled a rumpled blanket over themselves, and fallen asleep forever. The thought of sleep must have lured her into it, for the next thing she knew, the world was dark, save for the stars and the nearly full moon, so bright that a fire hadn't been needed, though she could have used its warmth. Cassian lay a few feet away, his back to her, the moonlight gilding his wings. He'd left her a plate of food, bread and hard cheese, and some sort of dried meat. She didn't touch it, though, ignored the grumble in her stomach. She just cracked her stiff neck, wrapped a blanket around herself, and lay upon the ground. She slid her arm again beneath her head and closed her eyes against the cold. For the next 2 days, she stared at the back of Cassian's head. For the next 2 days, she did not speak. Every pebble and stone seemed to be on a quest to trip her or twist her ankle or work its way inside her boots. Afternoon was approaching on the following day, clouds drifting just above the peaks on a swift wind, when her head began pounding. The sunlight turned too bright, her sweat stung. Despite days of walking, they had only cleared a few of the peaks. Mountains that Cassian sailed over when flying were endless on foot. How he selected the right path, she didn't ask. Where they were going, she didn't ask either. She just followed him, eyes fixed on his back. That sight blurred as her head, her whole body swayed a little. She tried to swallow and found her throat so dry her tongue had stuck to the roof of her mouth. She peeled it free. Water. When had she last had a sip of water? Her canteen was at the top of her pack, but to halt, to pull it out? She didn't feel like unbuckling her straps to drop the bag, like signaling to him that she needed to pause. Last night had been the same as the previous one. She had reached their camp, collapsed, and barely been able to remove the pack before falling asleep. She woke later to find a plate of cold food beside her, covered with a thin cloth against the elements. She ate while he slept, then focused her eyes again. Only sheer exhaustion could summon the oblivion she craved. Every time they stopped throughout the day, she was so tired she fell to her knees and dumped the pack. And during the pause in motion, she was so weary she couldn't think about the ruin she'd made of herself. The ruin she'd always been, deep down. No training, no learning about the Valkyries and their mind-stilling would help. Nothing would help. So she would wait for the water, because to stop was to allow those thoughts in, even if they trailed behind her like leaden shadows, heavier than the pack. Her ankle twisted on a loose stone, and she gritted her teeth against the lash of pain, but continued. Cassian hadn't so much as stumbled once. She would know. She watched him all day long. But he stumbled now. Nesta lurched forward, but no, that was her. She was the one falling. Cassian was halfway up the dried riverbed when stones crunched and cracked behind him. He whirled to find Nesta face down, not moving. He swore, rushing down the stony path, and slid to his knees before her. The sharp stones bit his legs through his pants, but he didn't care, not as he turned her over, his heart thundering. She'd fainted. His relief was a primal thing in him, settling, but he hadn't looked back at her in hours. Filmy white crusted her lips. Her skin was flushed and sweaty. He grabbed for the canteen at his belt, unscrewing the cap, and pulled her head into his lap. "Drink," he ordered, opening her mouth for her, his blood roaring in his ears. Nesta stirred, but didn't fight him when he poured a little water down her throat. It was enough to have her opening her eyes. They were glazed. Cassian demanded, "When was the last time you had water?" Her eyes sharpened, the first time she'd really looked at him in 3 solid days. But she only took the canteen and drank deep, draining it. When she'd finished, she groaned, pushing herself from his lap, but only to her side. He snapped, "You should have been drinking water throughout the day." She stared at the rocks around them. He couldn't stand that look, the vacancy, the indifference, as if she no longer really cared whether she lived or died here in the wild. His stomach twisted. Instinct bellowed at him to wrap himself around her, to comfort and soothe. But another voice, an ancient and wise voice, whispered to keep going. "One more mountain," that voice said. "Just one more mountain." He trusted that voice. "We'll camp here tonight." Nesta didn't try to rise, and Cassian scanned for a flatter expanse of ground. There, 20 feet up the riverbed and to the left, flat enough. "Come on," he coaxed. "A few more feet and you can sleep." She didn't move, as if she couldn't. He told himself it was because she'd fainted and might not be sturdy, but he walked back to her, crouched and picked her up in his arms, pack and all. She said nothing, absolutely nothing, but he knew it was coming. That storm. He knew that Nesta would speak again. And when she did, he'd better be ready to weather it. Nesta found another plate waiting when she awoke to darkness. The full moon had shown her face. So bright, the mountains, the rivers, the valley were illuminated enough that even the leaves on the trees far below were visible. She'd never seen such a view. It seemed like a secret, slumbering land that time had forgotten. She was nothing before that view, these mountains, as insignificant to any of it as one of the stones that still rattled in her boot. It was a blessed relief to be nothing and no one. She couldn't remember falling asleep, but dawn broke, and they were again moving, heading north, he said, showing her, in a rare moment of civility, that the mossy sides of trees always faced that way, helping him stay on course. There was a lake, he told her during lunch. They'd reach it tonight and stay there a day or two. She barely heard. 1 foot after another, mile after mile, up and down. The mountains watched her. The river sang to her, as if guiding her onward to that lake. No amount of driving her body into the earth would make her good. She knew it. Wondered if he did too. Wondered if he thought he was trekking out here with her on a fool's errand. Or maybe it was like one of the ancient stories she'd heard as a child. He, a wicked queen's huntsman, leading her into the deep wild before carving out her heart. She wished he would. Wished someone would cut the damned thing from her chest. Wished someone would smother the voice that whispered of every horrible thing she had ever done, every awful thought she had, every person she'd failed. She had been born wrong, had been born with claws and fangs, and had never been able to keep from using them, never been able to quell the part of her that roared at betrayal, that would hate and love more violently than anyone ever understood. Elaine had been the only one who perhaps grasped it. But now her sister loathed her. She didn't know how to fix it, how to make any of it right, how to stop being this way. She didn't remember a time when she hadn't been angry. Maybe before her mother had died, but even then her mother herself had been bitter, disdainful of their father, and her mother's disdain had become her own. She couldn't quell that relentless, churning anger, couldn't stop herself from lashing out before she could be wounded. She was no better than a rabid dog. She had been a rabid dog with Amran and Feyre, a beast, exactly like Tamlin. She hadn't even cared that she'd made it down the house stairs at last. Did it count when it was driven by fury? Did she count? Was she worth being counted? It was the question that sent everything crumpling inside her. Nesta cleared the hill Cassian had mounted ahead, and a sparkling turquoise lake spread before them. It lay slightly sunken between two peaks, as if a pair of green hands had been cupped to hold the water within them. Gray stones lined its shore. Nesta didn't see the lake, or the stones, or the sunlight and green. Her vision blurred, and her eyes stung, as if they'd been sliced, cleaved open to allow the tears to pass. She made it to the stones before she fell to her knees, so hard the rock bit into her bones. Was she worth being counted? She knew the answer. Had always known it. Cassian whirled toward her, but Nesta didn't see him either, or hear his words. Not as she buried her face in her hands and wept. Chapter 50. Once the wrenching, gasping sounds came out of her, Nesta knew she could not stop. She knelt on the shore of that mountain lake and let go entirely. She allowed every horrible thought to hit her, wash through her. Let herself see Feyre's pale, devastated face as Nesta had revealed the truth, as she'd let her own anger and pain ride her. She would never outlive her guilt. There was no point in trying. She sobbed into the darkness of her hands. And then the stones clicked, and a warm, steady presence appeared beside her. He didn't touch her, but his voice was nearby as he said, "I'm here." She sobbed harder at that. She couldn't stop, as if a dam had burst, and only letting the water run its course, raging through her, would suffice. "Nesta." His fingers grazed her shoulder. She couldn't bear that touch. The kindness in it. "Please," she said. Her first word in 5 days. He stilled. "Please what?" She leaned from him. "Don't touch me.
Don't be kind to me.
The words were a sobbing, rippling jumble.
Why?
The list of reasons surged, fighting to get out, to voice themselves. And she let them decide, let them flow through her as she whispered, I let him die. He went quiet. Threw her hands on her face, she continued to whisper.
He came to save me and fought for me, and I let him die with hate in my heart, hate for him. He died because I didn't stop it.
Her voice broke, and she wept harder.
And I was so horrid to him. Until the very end, I was so, so horrid to him all my life. And still, he somehow loved me. I didn't deserve it, but he did. And I let him die.
She bowed over her knees, saying into her palms,
I can't undo it. I can't fix it. I can't fix that he's dead. I can't fix what I said to Vera. I can't fix any of the horrible things I've done. I can't fix me.
She sobbed so hard, she thought her body would break with it. Wanted her body to come apart like a cracked egg. Wanted what was left of her soul to drift away on the mountain wind. She whispered,
I can't bear it.
Cassian said quietly, it isn't your fault. She shook her head, face still in her hands, as if it had shielded her from him. But he said, your father's death is not your fault. I was there, Nesta. I looked for a way out of it too, and there was nothing that could have been done.
I could have used my power. I could have tried.
Nesta. Her name was a sigh, as if he were pained. Then his arms were around her, and she was being pulled into his lap. She didn't fight it, not as he tucked her against his chest, into his strength and warmth.
I could have found a way. I should have found a way.
His hand began stroking her hair. Her entire body, right down to her bones, trembled.
My father's death, it's the reason I can't stand fires.
His hand stilled, then resumed. Why?
The logs,
she shuddered.
They crack. It sounds like breaking bone.
Like your father's neck.
Yes,
she breathed.
That's what I hear. I don't know how I'll ever not hear his neck snapping when I'm near a fire. It's torture.
He continued to stroke her head. A wave of words pushed themselves out of her.
I should have found a way to save us before then. Save Elaine and Feyre when we were poor. But I was so angry. I wanted him to try, to fight for us. But he didn't. And I would let us all starve to prove what a wretch he was. It consumed me so much that I let Feyre go into that forest and told myself I didn't care, that she was half wild and it didn't matter. And yet,
she let out a wrenching cry.
I close my eyes, and I see her that day she went out to hunt the first time. I see Elaine going into the cauldron. I see her taken by it during the war. I see my father dead. And now I will see Vera's face when I told her that the baby would kill her.
She shook and shook, her tears burning hot down her cheeks. Cassian kept stroking her hair, her back, as he held her by the lake.
I hate it,
she said.
Every part of me that does these things, and yet I can't stop it. I can't let down that barrier because to let it fall, to let everything in.
This was what would happen.
This shrieking, weeping mess she'd become. I can't bear to be in my head. I can't bear to hear and see everything over and over. That is all I hear. The snapping of his neck, his last words to me, that he loved me. She whispered, I didn't deserve that love. I deserve nothing.
Cassian's hands tightened on her, her own hands falling away as she buried her face against his jacket and wept into his chest. He said after a moment, I can tell you more about my mother and how her death nearly destroyed me. I can tell you in detail about what I did afterward and what that cost me. I can tell you about the decade it took me to work through it. I can tell you how many days and nights I suffered during the 49 years Amarantha held Rhys captive, the guilt tearing me apart, that I wasn't there to help him, that I couldn't save him. I can tell you how I still look at him and know I'm not worthy of him, that I failed him when he needed me. That fact drags me from sleep sometimes. I can tell you I've killed so many people I've lost count, but I remember most of their faces. I can tell you how I hear Eris and Devlin and the others talk, and deep down, I still believe that I am a worthless bastard brute. That it doesn't matter how many siphons I have or how many battles I've won, because I failed the two people dearest to me when it mattered the most. She couldn't find the words to tell him that he was wrong, that he was good and brave and... But I'm not going to tell you all of that, he said, pressing a kiss to the top of her head. The wind seemed to pause, the sunlight on the lake brightening. He said, I'm going to tell you that you will get through it, that you will face all of this, and you will get through it, that these tears are good, Nesta. These tears mean you care. I'm going to tell you that it is not too late for any of it. And I can't tell you when or how, but it will get better. What you feel, this guilt and pain and self-loathing, you will get through it, but only if you are willing to fight. Only if you are willing to face it and embrace it and walk through it to emerge on the other side of it. And maybe you will still feel that tinge of pain. But there is another side, a better side. She pulled back from his chest then, found his gaze lined with silver.
I don't know how to get there. I don't think I'm capable of it.
His eyes glimmered with pain for her. You are. I've seen it. I've seen what you can do when you're willing to fight for the people you love. Why not apply that same bravery and loyalty to yourself? Don't say you don't deserve it. He gripped her chin. Everyone deserves happiness. The road there isn't easy. It is long and hard and often traveled utterly blind, but you keep going. He nodded to the mountains, the lake. Because you know the destination will be worthwhile. She stared up at him, this male who had walked with her for 5 days in near silence, waiting, she knew, for this moment. She blurted,
All the things I've done before.
Leave them in the past. Apologize to who you feel the need to, but leave those things behind.
Forgiveness is not that easy.
Forgiveness is something we also grant ourselves. And I can talk to you until these mountains crumble around us. But if you don't wish to be forgiven, if you don't want to stop feeling this way,
It won't happen. He cupped her cheek, calluses scraping across her overheated skin.
You don't need to become some impossible ideal. You don't need to become sweet and simpering. You can give everyone that I will slay my enemies look, which is my favorite look, by the way. You can keep that sharpness I like so much, that boldness and fearlessness. I don't want you to ever lose those things, to cage yourself.
But I still don't know how to fix myself.
There's nothing broken to be fixed, he said fiercely. You are helping yourself, helping the parts of you that hurt too much, and perhaps hurt others too.
Nesta knew he wouldn't ever have said it, but she saw it in his gaze, that she had hurt him many times. She'd known she had, but to see it again in his face? She lifted her hand to his cheek and laid it there, too drained to care about the gentleness of the touch. Cassian nuzzled into her hand, closing his eyes. I'll be with you every step of the way, he whispered into her palm. Just don't lock me out. You want to walk in silence for a week? I'm fine with that, so long as you talk to me at the end of it. She stroked a thumb over his cheekbone, marveling at him, the words and his beauty. Some essential piece of herself clicked into place, some piece that whispered, try. Cassian opened his eyes, and they were so lovely they nearly stole the breath from her. Nesta leaned forward until their brows touched, and despite all that brimmed in her heart, all that flowed through her body, sure and true, she merely whispered, thank you. The storm had broken, and it was not what Cassian had expected. He had expected rage capable of bringing down mountains, not tears enough to fill this lake. Every sob had broken his heart. Every shake of her body as the words worked themselves out of her had torn him to shreds, until he hadn't been able to keep from wrapping himself around her, comforting her. She hadn't heard wood cracking in a fire, but breaking bone. He should have known. How many fires had Nesta flinched from, hearing not the wood but her father's snapping neck? At last year's winter solstice party, she'd been pale and withdrawn, far worse than usual, and they'd had a massive crackling fire in that room with them, had kept it burning hot and loud all night. Every snap would have reminded her of her father. Each one would have been brutal, unbearable. And when she'd suddenly rushed from the townhouse at the end of the party, had it been to get away from them? Or to get free of the sound. Possibly both, but he wished she'd said something. He wished he'd at least known. And fuck, how many fires had he built these last few days? That first night she'd curled as far from the flame as she could get, had slept with an arm over her head, blocking her ears. Mother damn him. And at the blacksmith, when she'd requested to move to a cooler, quieter room, one without the crackle of the forge, it had taken more courage than he'd understood for her to ask to return to the workshop, to the flames, to hammer those blades. She'd been suffering, and he'd had no idea how much it consumed every facet of her life. He'd seen her self-loathing and anger, but hadn't realized how much she'd been aware of it, how much it had eaten her up. He couldn't stomach it, to know she'd hurt this much for so long. Cassian held her on the shores of the lake until the sun set, until the moon rose, and they remained there, listening to each other breathe, as if the world had been flooded by her tears, as if they were both waiting to see what emerged once the floodwaters receded. The lake gleamed like a silver mirror in the moonlight, so bright it could have been dusk. His stomach grumbled with hunger, but as the moon drifted higher, he pressed a kiss to her head. "Get up." She stirred against him, but obeyed. He groaned, legs stiff from sitting for so long, and rose with her, her arms wrapped around herself, as if she'd retreat behind that steel wall within her mind, her heart. Cassian drew the Illyrian blade from down his back. It gleamed with moonlight as he extended it to her hilt first. "Take it." Blinking, eyes still puffy with tears, she did. The blade dipped as she wrapped her hands around it, as if she didn't expect its weight after so long with the wooden practice swords. Cassian stepped back, then said, "Show me the 8-pointed star." She studied the blade, then swallowed. Her features were open, fearful, but so trusting that he nearly went to his knees. He nodded toward the blade. "Show me Nesta." Whatever she sought in his face, she found it. She widened her stance, bracing her feet on the stones. Cassian held his breath as she took up the first position. Nesta lifted the sword and exited.